The world's best don't get results alone, and now neither do you, no matter when, where, or what you're working on. Introducing Pit Stop's AI Avatar Marketplace. Think of it like Spotify, but for personal and professional growth. Imagine instant access to digital versions of the world's top coaches, each one trained on their unique methods, experience, and coaching style. This isn't just another chatbot. Every Pit Stop AI avatar is powered by real coach insights, their notes, their podcasts, and what they've learned from real sessions. It's a truly personalized coaching companion, so much smarter and more relevant than generic tools like ChatGPT. Whether you want to level up in business, build new habits, manage stress, or boost your confidence, you're not just getting advice, you're getting it directly from the playbook of proven high achievers, all at a fraction of the cost of traditional coaching and available 24/7 whenever you need that extra edge. Ready to find the coach that you need? Use Pit Stop as your launchpad for growth. Head to the link in the show notes and download the app now.
Welcome to Drive to Thrive, a Pit Stop podcast. My name is Sandy and I am your host. And this week I am joined by Alexander Cottle. Alexander is the founder of The Unmasked Man, a company facilitating retreats here in the UK, men's retreats, for them to go and face the dark parts of themselves, taking into account kind of Eastern philosophy. But essentially, it's how men can transform themselves, tap into their shame, the dark parts of themselves, and learn to find purpose. But before that, as Alex got into in the episode, it's not just about finding your purpose. It's about finding who you are as a person. And within that, you can then figure out what your purpose is. We talked about the patriarchal dream, what that is, and what led to Alex's burnout before he went on to do what he's doing now. Why so many men in today's world are looking to coaching and retreats and the effects of social media, and why we're all comparing ourselves to each other so much and what we can do to stop that. Alex talked about Eastern philosophy, lessons we can take from that and learn in today's world, but in the West as well. Why we are losing our concentration so much and what we can do to bring that back. There's a great candle technique that Alex talks about, and so much more. A really, really valuable conversation with loads of great insights. I hope you guys enjoy our conversation with Alexander Cottle. Alexander Cottle, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Sandy. It's a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
You talk a lot about something called the patriarchal dream. Firstly, what is that? And then what about that led to you experiencing that burnout and the subsequent stroke that you had after that?
So to me, I was chasing an illusion. I was chasing something that I was told that I must find in order to be happy, something that I must... hoops that I must jump through in order to become. And I realized that this wasn't my true purpose. This wasn't my true legacy. This wasn't why I wanted to really be here. Don't get me wrong. I was happy in some degree. I'd gone through the usual means of school, university, and then jumping into the big bad world, getting a job, going to London, where I thought the streets would be paved with gold, and I'm kind of chasing a pattern and a conformity that was, yeah, dictated to me. But I also realized later on, not at the time, that it was also coming from a wounding. And it was coming from the father wounding of, please see me. Do I exist? Am I enough? I need to prove myself in the world. And so this kind of patriarchal mission that sometimes or often many men follow, they don't realize the emptiness that they feel inside until it's too late. And for me, that's what happened. I was fortunate enough that too late began at 27 rather than in my late 50s, 60s. But this lack of wholeness, this lack of like, is this really my true purpose, was mirrored to me through a breaking and a collapsing. And thank God it did.
I like how you use the word purpose. That's something that we've talked about a lot here. And I think that is where so many men struggle. And, you know, the idea of you going to London and the big city, I think so many men especially chase that, because kind of that's how we define ourselves. And that's how we're like power, you know, we chase the career and the finance and that side of life. And then, as you said, you get down the line and you realize actually there's other things that are just as important, and maybe you kind of missed out on that stuff. And that's where you get regret rather than nostalgia. So what do you, when you're doing your kind of retreats, and when you are talking with these men and going through that kind of transformation with them and things like that, how does that journey begin in terms of you addressing this kind of like culture that we've built around to facilitate this way of being for men, you know, where they do feel like they have to go and do that? Is that something that you actively try and help men sort of break down from your own experience?
Yeah, it's what I do every single day when I coach men. It's what I do at the retreats when I hold space for them. First and foremost, we start with truth. We break it down to where in their life are they really unhappy? And where in their life are they not being the man they want to be? And the only thing stopping you from the man that you are and the man you want to be is the man you've been conditioned to be. Okay. And so from there, that's the birthplace for change. And really, it comes down to looking at yourself deeply in the mirror, and saying, is this really what ignites my soul? Now, a man generally judges his self-worth by what he provides in the world. Okay, so that's why this mission to become something is so strong in a man. Now, when a man realizes it's okay to receive, when a man realizes it's okay to stumble, to fall, to trip, to break down, actually, this is a necessary part into becoming more whole, more balanced, and to rise again through struggle, through heartbreak, through tribulation. Then he can really start to connect with what his truth is. But in order to meet his truth, he's got to look himself in the mirror deeply. And not all men are ready to do that, you know. And there's a lot of things out there to stop a man from looking himself in the mirror. And I'm not here to shame those things, but we live in a society which takes our attention away with mobile phones. We can numb our emotions through alcohol, drugs, like I did. We can lose our masculine energy and power through masturbation and porn addiction. So these are real issues that men face every single day. And it's really saying to yourself, I don't want to be that man anymore.
You talk a lot about transformation, and that is a very powerful word. But what does that actually look like? In terms of the men that you coach, and you know, you mentioned a few of the issues that so many men struggle with and things like that. What are some kind of positive ways that you've seen through coaching where men have overcome that and got past that? I suppose, I guess, like where are the kind of tangible steps that men can start to take if they do find themselves struggling with those issues?
Well, most men aren't connected to their mission because they're not connected to their truth. They're not connected to their truth because they're being nice guys and they're going around people pleasing all the time. They're building up resentment. They're putting that resentment coin in that resentment jar. And then one day that jar cracks and then they leak out their anger and they explode onto the world. They're suppressing, in the suppression of their anger is also the suppression of their power. So what I work with is I work with shadow work. So when we deny something inside of ourselves, when we deny parts that we've either deemed unacceptable by ourselves or by society, we put them in what's called shadow. And so I might layer my grief into shadow. I may layer my anger into shadow. I may layer my shame, or should I say shame wraps itself around those parts as well. So then I can't access them. But when we deny these parts, we also deny the good parts. And so a man's mission and a man's power is encapsulated in the suppressed anger that he's never faced. So he thinks that he's living his mission, but he can't because he's not actually tapped into his true unprocessed trauma, which would allow him to face his anger, which underneath anger is always grief, and feel his emotions to then pull back the beautiful part from the shadow, which is his power, his drive, his focus. Now, you might say, well, lots of men have power, drive, and focus, but they might be driving over their emotions and using that as a crutch to essentially not feel. And this is explore deeper in some of the work that we do. We call these archetype, but this would be in particular an overinflated warrior archetype, or an overinflated archetype of a man that is just driving over himself again and again and again, because either society told him he wasn't allowed to feel, or maybe he experienced something like our forefathers before, which was there was a war on, and when there's a war, you don't have time to feel. So you buried those emotions 6 feet under, and you got on with the job at hand. That is not a way to live, though. That's temporary and needed at times, but that's not a way to continue to live. So many men are cut off from their purpose because they're cut off from their actual emotional body. They can't feel what they truly want. If I can't feel my grief and I can't feel my anger, then I also substitute the ability to love. Yeah, and to get excited. So I become this kind of stoic, numb, robotic part of myself that I present to the world. So how can I ever know my purpose if I can't connect to my heart? Make sense?
100%. So it's almost like we're perhaps jumping a couple of steps ahead when we are searching for purpose and things like that. And actually, maybe there's a certain extent of we need to look a little bit deeper and a bit further inward to try and figure out who we are before we figure out the purpose.
Yes, and then we mislay purpose by looking for validation. So we go, okay, if I become this, 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 and this, oh, I'm getting validation here from others, classic nice guy symptom, by the way, right? Then I get told what you want me to be. So I become in the world what all of you people validated me for, but actually I've disconnected from my true purpose. And then I've become something I never really wanted to be. And then I resent myself. Then I resent others. Then I suppress my emotions even more. And I don't follow my truth. Does that land?
100%. You've said nice guy a few times as if it's like almost like a negative connotation to it. But typically when you think about, oh, he's a nice guy, you're like, oh, that's cool. Can you go into that a bit more?
Yeah, of course. So No More Mr. Nice Guy is a book by the great Dr. Robert Glover. And it's a fantastic book. And it breaks down the kind of patterns and programs and introjective values of a nice guy. Now, a nice guy, being a nice guy, there's nothing wrong with being nice, all right? We all want to be met with that loving, nice energy. What I mean by nice guy is a man that's basically through gritted teeth, portraying one image to the world, where secretly, continuously making covert contracts. So covert contracts are like saying, like wanting my partner to really empty the dishwasher, but not telling her, not expressing my needs. So a nice guy can't express his needs. So then I get resentful at her for not doing the very thing that I wanted her to do. But did I ask her? No, I didn't. So therefore, I'm going around making all these contracts with the world that I'm then getting infuriated with at a later date. It's a man that gives away his power. It's a man that again, is validated externally. It's a man that doesn't have needs, doesn't know how to have needs, doesn't express his needs, and doesn't express his desires. Because again, we get back to what I said earlier, a man generally judges himself by what he provides rather than who he is, his essence. Yeah, it's just like, what is my output? Like a robot again. What is my output? I earn this much money. I work this many hours. So I must be a good man, or I must be achieving because I've got these followers on Instagram, whatever it is.
There's have you heard of the actor Jonah Hill? He did this. There was a great documentary on Netflix about him called Stutz that was him talking to his therapist, essentially.
Beautiful.
I think it was in that he said it, or it was maybe in another interview. And he said it was actually him talking about how he's got really into surfing over the last few years. And he, for so long, he didn't feel like he belonged or he could go surfing because he's, you know, overweight and all this, didn't feel like he fit the part. Mm-hmm. And he used this analogy of he didn't feel like he deserved a seat at the table, you know, and he didn't feel like he belonged there. And then because he wasn't necessarily bringing anything to it as Jonah Hill, the surfer, Jonah Hill, the actor, can bring loads of things, but Jonah Hill, the surfer, couldn't. Mm-hmm. And actually, he kind of ended up sort of managing to flip it on its head and think about it of like, actually, I can just bring me to the table. And actually, you know, I'm Jonah the friend, or Jonah the family member, or Jonah the, you know, shoulder to be there. And rather than being Jonah the actor or even Jonah the surfer, he was like, no, I can just be me. And that's something I've talked about it on the podcast before with myself as well. And I've like grappled with that as well. And I think we're so quick, as you've said, especially as men, to attach labels to ourselves, like a title of what we are, so that we can fall into a tribe, because we are tribal essentially, aren't we? So, you know, whether it is an interest or a career or a status where we're at in life, we're so quick to attach that so that I am Sandy, you know, colon the whatever, you know? Does that kind of resonate? Is that something that you've kind of had to work with men on? Does that kind of make sense? I feel like I don't know. I feel like I waffled a bit there.
No, I 100% understand. And yeah, I had my birthday last week. And this happened to me. I am very familiar with being blessed as Alexander the Facilitator, Alexander, founder of the Unmasked Man. But to be stood there, my partner put on a surprise birthday party, to be stood there and be blessed by 17 other friends just for being Alex, that was an edge. There's this kind of voice in my head, this risk manager going, are we sure about this? Like, is this okay? Like, I'm just being loved here for being rather than doing. Mm. And of course, that is the journey home back to ourselves, is that acceptance. Because a man rarely stops to just be with himself. He only feels he is of value when he is doing. So similar to Jonah Hill, can I just be in the wave? Can I just be here surfing? What am I providing right now? Well, what if we got rid of that question? And we stop that question, because that question can be powerful. What am I providing? Of course it can be. It can help us step up to challenge, but it can also cripple us and believe that everything that we do must be conditional. Can I just stand here and be accepted and loved and blessed unconditionally?
Is this why you think that, because I would love to get your thoughts on this, but it does seem like it's a problem that's getting worse, especially for men. You know, there are, you know, their social media and the digital world is increasingly encroaching on, you know, our natural world, you know, the way that careers are formed these days, the family structures now are so different to even my parents. You know, I'm 33. So, you know, everything, it does seem like things are getting harder. Do you think that is why so many more men are looking to things like what you facilitate and with the Unmasked Man and other kind of retreats and receiving coaching? Why do you think that appetite has grown so much in today's world?
I think we live in a world with, well, many of us do, with social media. Social media draws beautiful opportunities for men to find our work, for instance. But it, on the flip side of that, it creates a breeding ground for comparison. Because when we are in this only valuing ourselves by what we are doing, what we put out into the world, then that breeds competition, and that breeds envy. And so we're looking left and right. We're not focusing on the painting that we're putting together in front of us, our own canvas. We're continuously comparing. And through that comparison, comparison is the thief of joy. It steals what we're doing. And I think that there's just so much more pressure because we have access to everyone else's story 24/7. And then we make assumptions. We build our own story of how that person must be living their life. We don't know. Just because what they're portraying on Instagram, is that really how they're living? You know, I like to ask the question at the retreats, who are you when no one's watching?
Yeah.
Who are you when, and I mean the phone, I mean all of it, when your partner's not there, because that's the man that you are. And that can be a crippling mirror to explore. But I think it's a magnitude of the society that we live in, the access to one another's lives, the pressure, the increase in technology, the increase in mental health disorders, ADHD, OCD. They're getting bigger and bigger. People's attention spans are getting smaller and smaller. So yeah, we've lost certain qualities that we would have had 100 years ago.
We'll get back to the episode in 1 minute, but first I want to tell you about our app. Imagine having the same kind of support and coaching that top athletes and successful people rely on to reach their goals. That's what Pit Stop offers, a platform designed to help you build better habits, strengthen relationships, improve in your career and finances, as well as overcoming challenges like anxiety, addiction, or burnout. With Pit Stop, you're not just getting a coach, you're joining a community. You'll have access to one-on-one expert guidance, a cutting-edge habit tracker, smart journaling tools, and a constantly updated library of quick actionable insights. It's everything you need to grow right at your fingertips. As a listener of this podcast, you can kickstart your journey with an exclusive 20% discount on your first 3 months of one-to-one coaching. Just use the code PODCAST when you sign up. Why wait for things to change? Take action and start your next chapter today.
As well as, you know, within The Unmasked Man and the things you do, you talk a lot about Eastern philosophy as well.
I do.
Obviously, what sort of lessons can we kind of take from you know, old Eastern philosophy? So I'm not that clued up on it, but a couple of years ago, I was going through a bit of a bad time and I got really into the sort of Stoicism stuff. I read a lot of Ryan Holiday's books and I read Meditations and all the things like that. And to use one of your words, like, it was transformative. It was completely transformative. It literally changed my life. I was in Brazil with some friends and I read all those books, and the attitude I had on the flight there compared to the attitude I had on the flight home was insane. Even about tiny things, you know, it was all just the focus on what you can't control. So I'm kind of familiar with that, but the Eastern philosophy I'm not so familiar with. So what sort of lessons can we take from there for us living in the West?
Yeah, so I've studied both Buddhism and yoga intensely over the years. It's a passion that I and a way that I live day by day. Now, I don't know if the East is what it was in terms of politically and geographically, but the essence and spirit of the teachings that came from the East and that come from the East is less about this doing again and more about this being, more about this connecting with the present moment, connecting with body, connecting with breath, watching the mind. A lot of people, you ask them, where do you reside in your body? A lot of people will actually put their hand on their head. You know, they think that we are these little robots just being moved around continuously by our brain. And of course, the Eastern traditions teach us something deeper. They teach us the essence of the soul, the essence of the heart, the teaching of the heart, and actually that the mind is a great servant, but it's a lousy master. And we are living through our mind. We are living continuously. Thought arises, impulse, act. Thought arises, impulse, act. We never sit back and watch because our lives are so fast. So the Eastern philosophy taught me to slow down. It taught me to observe. It taught me to be with the uncomfortable sensations in the body, the feelings, the emotions that I didn't want to face. From those uncomfortable emotions, that is the self-soothing place that addiction comes and arises from. Oh, I'm feeling anger. I'll have a drink. Oh, I'm feeling grief right now. I'll comfort eat. So addiction is something that's created from the trauma that I don't want to feel and face in my body. What Eastern teachings gave me was the ability to sit with that discomfort again and again, and still do every day. To be with myself. There's an ancient principle called candle gazing, tratak or trataka in the Buddhist and yogic teachings, and I teach this to the men, and it's the simple art of just focusing on the candle flame, okay, for 10-15 minutes. Now, in a world where we have these, again, I'm not knocking technology is amazing, okay, I use it every day, I'm using it now, our attention span, if you compared your attention span even to 5-6 years ago, you'd probably be able to notice a difference if you'd have had marked it then, okay? Now, what something like Trataka or Tratak does is it brings back the ability to concentrate. And what is meditation? Meditation is essentially single-pointed mind concentration. So you're bringing your attention back to this candle again and again and again. And I've worked with lots of men just doing this 10 minutes a day, and it's an absolute game changer for them. They're showing up more presently with their kids, with their wife. They're not doom scrolling. They're not trying to sit down and do work, and their mind is like absolute maze and they don't know which task to start first. They build focus, they build clarity simply by the art of keeping concentration. The same way that you go to the gym and you flex your muscles and you build your muscle strength, you're just building your concentration strength. So this, the yogis and the Buddhists, they knew this. They knew this thousands of years ago. And so through this ancient art of Trataka, they could start to be find a stillness, this sattvic energy that we call in yoga. They can find it in themselves and they can start to really connect with their body. Because if we don't connect with our body, we can't really connect with our purpose, like I said earlier, or what we truly, truly want. What we think we want comes from mind rather than something deeper, which is curiosity of heart, curiosity of soul, curiosity of body.
I did a podcast with a guy at the start of this year called Adam Hustler. He does loads of kind of yoga and that kind of thing. And he actually called me out on something. So I live down here in Cornwall in the UK. I surf most days a week and it's a huge passion of mine. And I said to him, I was like, surfing is my meditation. Mm-hmm. And he stopped me straight away and he was like, no, it's not. No, it's not. And from what he said was, actually, the reason surfing is your meditation is because you've already done the meditation work so that you can then bring that presence into the arena of surfing or into whatever, you know, some people say, oh, playing with my kids is my meditation. And it's like, no. Whether you've done it as a deliberate practice or not, you've done that internal work where you can reach that place of stillness and presence so that when you are doing said activity, you then find that meditative. Mm-hmm. Does that kind of make sense with the practices that you've kind of studied and things like that? Or would you say that, because, you know, you see a lot of people that say, oh, this is my meditation. Golf is my meditation. You know, surfing is my meditation. And actually, as I said, Adam kind of flipped that on its head for me and made me realize maybe it's not. And there is work to do beforehand, like you said earlier.
Yeah. Well, the deep spiritual question is, who are you when you're not in presence? Okay. And when you're in presence, you feel happier. When you're in presence with yourself, you feel happier. So when you're on that wave, you're present with yourself. You have to be, right? Mm. I also come from a background of surfing. You've got a big wave coming. You're paddling. If I don't get this, you're alive. You're alive with the present moment. So you're in presence. You don't actually have time to go into a story, okay? When you're knitting, when you're sewing, when you're making art, you're in presence. Now, story and thought is still there. Emotions are still moving in the background, but there's less attention on it. So you're in this mindful state. So I would say these are more mindfulness exercises, okay, like coloring in or drawing. Yeah. Mm. Prior to that, actual focused meditation is something that I would encourage a man or a human being, doesn't have to be a man, to lean into. And this is single-pointed concentration. So in yoga or Buddhism, we'd focus on a drishti. So it might be the tip of the nostrils and just your focus is continuously on the airflow in and out of the nostrils. It might be the sounds outside the room or it might be the candle in front of you. But the thing is you choose one and by refining one, you're building connection with the present moment. So then when you go and surf, so then when you go and knit, so then when you go and paint, you are doing it more present, more mindful, more embodied. And that radio dial that can cause you so much problem in your head with all those excessive thoughts can be gently turned down until it's a small flickering noise in the background. So the idea is that, in my opinion, we train for meditation so we can sit. We sit, literally, and then we walk. And when we walk out into the world, like when we surf, there's still a meditative quality being brought forward to the wave or to the brush. It's just that we have learnt the quality of how to sit.
Yeah.
And when I mean sit, I don't mean you have to sit down, but sit with oneself and observe. Yeah,
that was kind of my next question, because what about, you know, I'm sure men are listening and, you know, they are leading kind of these busy lives and they've got children to look after and they've got offices to go to and staff to deal with and, yep, you know, partners and in-laws and trying, yep, to find time to go and do something with their friends that they haven't seen in 3 months as well. And
yep,
when someone leaves one of your retreats and they go back to that kind of really busy world and, mm-hmm, you know, I suppose real life. Mm-hmm. Do you have a kind of set of tools that they can take with them so that they can try and start bringing that into daily life. Because as I said before we hit record, myself and Emmett, the founder of Pitstop, we went on a men's retreat in the Wicklow Mountains in Ireland at the start of March this year. And it was interesting chatting to the facilitators there as well, and even some of the people on the retreat with us. And a lot of them at the end were like, I don't want to go home. You know, they didn't, because they were like, this is my kind of safe space. And then interesting, the facilitator said sometimes the big problem is the space between the retreats, where people kind of fall back into, you know, old ways and kind of things like that. I suppose, yeah, how have you navigated that, and what tools do you give men to go into back into the world with?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I see it again and again and again. And I am very direct and very honest with the men that come to our retreats. I say, if you want to use this retreat as a, you know, a one-off, tick the box, don't come. If you treat this for life, and you treat this as the first step of a 1,000-step journey, and you really want change, then come. Because men's work in particular, men's retreats, they're not for Christmas. The men's work is for life. It's because it's the bits in between the retreats that you're going to struggle. And so then how do I show up then? So the tools that we implement, there's meditations that you can go and type in right this moment on YouTube, and you'll have me in your living room and I'll be guiding you through archetypal meditations. We give them, we have a London men's circle. We have other men's circles throughout the UK that are forming. We have online accountability groups. We have the ability to connect in our WhatsApp community to check in every single day. Men are checking in continuously. But really, if you want true transformation, you've got to do a combination of the work at home, i.e. building in yoga I'll just say in yoga, the Sanskrit terminology for a morning routine is sadhana. So I really work with a man on building a strong morning routine. Now, you said to me at the beginning of this question, but what about in-laws? But what about children? But what about this? What about that? Yes, I agree with you. I have all these kind of things that I have to face as well. The difference is, what's the cost if I don't create some time for myself? And we get back to where we were earlier. A man doesn't create time for himself because he doesn't value himself unless he's providing. So I go and show up for my in-laws. I go and show up for my children. I go and show up for every single one else. And who gets forgotten? Me. So I teach men to retrain their brain. And I say, before you put anyone else's gas mask on, you've got to put your own on. Okay, you've got to nourish your own love tanks. Maybe you set your clock an hour earlier in the morning to give yourself that time, so that you are then fulfilled, that you are then turning up to your children, to your partner, more centered, more grounded, and that's the introjective values and the programs that we really tackle at the retreat. Because if a man is moving from that place of validation, moving from that place of continuously doing for everyone else, he's going to get bitter, he's going to get resentful, and then he's going to leak his energy throughout the world. So he needs to realize that first. He needs to continue the tools. He needs to build a morning practice. This is, you know, what my opinion, just my opinion only. And there are some solid foundations for him to continue this path, but he must commit to it. If he really wants truth and change, if he wants a one-off experience, then it's probably not the right journey for him to take.
Yeah, like you said, it's almost, and that's really cool. I didn't know you guys did that. I like that, because it is one of those things. It's not a, I think so many people think that it's, you go to one retreat or you go to one, you know, it's like people in January when they sign up and they go to the gym for 1 week and expect to get a six pack. You know, it's like, I guess people think they go to one retreat or they go and do one yoga class or something and suddenly they've reached enlightenment and everything's going to be fine and everything's going to be different. A bit of a common theme in the last couple of weeks on the podcast as well has been the idea of suffering. And, you know, I saw something recently and someone said that it's so stupid. Oh, what's your goal in life? And people say, oh, I just want to be happy. And they're like, well, that's just stupid. Like happiness isn't what you want to be or what you want to do. Like happiness is something fluid. It comes and goes. It's an emotion, you know? And they kind of push back on that. And actually, suffering is there whether we like it or not, but we get to choose our suffering. And so often we kind of forget that. I know that suffering is quite a huge part of Buddhism and things like that. But how do you go about addressing suffering? And, you know, like I quote Ross Edgley all the time, the kind of, you know, the endurance athlete from the UK. And he talks about everyone, you always need a daily dose of discomfort. You know, we're too comfortable now in our life. And actually, we get to choose our discomfort. And that discomfort is, right, well, I'm going to go to the gym today and it's going to suck. But actually, in the long run, it's going to be more comfortable than me sitting on the sofa feeling overweight and, you know, or I've got to go to that wedding in 6 months and I'm going to feel like I look like shit because I didn't go to the gym. So that's the idea of kind of choosing your suffering. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that side of things as well.
Yeah, there's so much there. I'm going to start with the happiness comment to begin with. Now, most people want to be happy, okay, but they're not willing to feel the uncomfortable emotions. You can't have happiness without sadness, okay? What I mean by that, no tree can grow to heaven unless its roots grow down to hell, Carl Jung, okay? So I do not get happy by turning away from my grief, my anger, my fear, and running in the opposite direction. What happens is I have a bungee cord on my back and it just pulls me back into those things. And then that magnified is depression, okay? Anxiety. So I cannot, what resists persists. I cannot be happy if I'm continuously running away from the uncomfortable, running away from the discomfort, running away from feeling those emotions. So the Eastern path taught me this, and wise experiential energy taught me this, that I must turn around. I must face my fear. I must face my grief. I must face my anger. I must face the uncomfortable energy and the discomfort, and I must grow through that place. And the more comfortable I get in the uncomfortable of feeling of doing those actions, those things, and letting them sit inside my body, my world literally expands. Yeah. The cave that you fear to enter holds your gold. It holds your treasure. Okay. Everything you've ever wanted is on the outside of your comfort zone. You've heard all of these phrases, all right? Mm. Let them land. Let them penetrate your soul. Yeah, let them touch something real and deeper inside of you. Because the truth is, if I shut my world off, if I sit in comfort all the time, my world is going to get very small and I'm going to get very depressed. I'm going to feel very lonely, very isolated. I have to continuously make sure that I am leaning into growth edges, ways that, like, just like a lobster expanding into its next layer, right? Pushing itself out. I have to make sure that I am expanding my energy field, my body, my goals. Again, not because, and this is where we have to tweak it, not because I need to prove myself to the world like before, because that's what the boy does. That's what I did when I was 27. Okay, now I realize that it's a way of life because I get to feel more, I get to open more, I get to live more, I get to be free more. Okay, what's the other side of grief? Well, it's joy. What's the other side of fear? It's trust. What's the other side of anger? It's power. So I get to be more trusting, more powerful, more joyous. But I must face those opposites first.
Love that you, the way you framed that there, because it was a kind of next question of mine. Of so often with this stuff and with the retreats, we're often told as men that it can almost sometimes feel like we shouldn't be achieving and that we shouldn't be striving for greatness and we shouldn't be striving for excellence, because come on, bring yourself back and make it all about, you know, being just yourself. But actually, quite a lot of men out there, myself included, and I would say from getting to know you for the last 40 minutes or so, I would say you're in there as well, of like, I want to do stuff. I want to achieve. I want to do great things. And I want to feel good, proud of myself and powerful and things like that. But I want to do it in the right way. And I think you've kind of answered it before I did the question, but hopefully you can speak a bit more to it. But there's so many men out there that think that. And then when they hear this stuff, I think sometimes they get a bit switched off to it because they're like, no, I want to strive and I want to feel powerful. And I love that you were like, no, 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 you can still do that. It's not about suddenly going, right, fine, I'm going to go and be happy with nothing and sit under the tree. Because like, I like stuff. I bought a new surfboard last month. It felt great. I'm going on holiday straight after this podcast for a week. I'm getting on a plane tomorrow to go to Greece and see my friends. Like, I love that. Yes. You know, I'm excited about that, and I'm proud of those things. You know, I just bought a house. Like, it's great, but and I'm proud of that. But equally, I think, yeah, I want to make sure that I'm doing it in the right way and that I'm doing it, I don't know, like for me, but also because I want to do it, not because I feel like I have to do it.
Absolutely. And it's making sure that we're tuned into the right message. Every action starts with an intention. And if I am disconnected from my heart, then I am disconnected probably from my true why and my true intention. So therefore, I move from a place of mind. Now, the mind, the reason we've survived so long as a human species is that it's basically a huge operating system that keeps us safe. Okay, it's continuously every single second of every single day working out, am I safe in my current surrounding? What could go wrong? Okay, it is. If you just think about it now, if you look around the room, it is. So there's a lot of fear in the mind. There's a lot of mistrust in the mind. There's a lot of old programs and conditionings in the mind. But once I start to watch the mind, once I start to train and understand the mind and see the illusion that the mind can create and some of the patterns and the programs. Remember, the only thing stopping you from the man that you are and the man that you want to be is the man you've been programmed to be through society, through your conditioning, through your experiences. The eyes are not just lenses, they're projectors, okay? You project out onto someone. You see a man and you go, oh, he's muscly. Oh, I must fear him or whatever story we tell ourselves. Okay, that's called a projection. that's based on your previous experience with maybe boys at school that bullied us. Me. Yeah, right. That happened to me. So already I've got this projection. So if I can start to really notice my projections, understand my mind, understand my fears, understand my mistrust, understand my shadows parts. These parts that I've denied. And I start to tap into my heart and my body and my essence of my real intention and my real why. Then I know that when I act, because I'm not saying don't act, I'm saying go and be big, go and be bright, go and build your legacy. But do it for the right reasons. Do not do it because you didn't feel good enough as a child. Yeah. Why do you think Hitler wanted to take over the world? Because he felt deeply insecure. Don't move from an insecure place. Don't bring action into the world from an insecure place. Don't go and create something because you're just really focused on even a materialistic gain. Because I'm not saying you can't have material gain either, but what I'm saying is if that is our objective solely, that won't fulfill you. And I'll be really honest here. The only thing that's ever fulfilled me, and I think that the thing that really fulfills a man deeply is service. Okay. 100%. So when I'm connected to service, and I'm not talking about overriding ourselves again and being a martyr and dying on our sword in the gift of service, because then we've become the nice guy that's committed himself. I'm talking about the beautiful gift of filling up our own love tanks, like I said earlier, this energy of our own body, and then giving to the world unconditionally, yeah, and just showing up for others. And that's what a lot of men, with the work that we do, they go on to maybe do our facilitator training. They realize that the gift of learning how to do this work and then how to bring it to other men. And through healing and helping other men, they heal and help their own self, their own little boy that resides inside of them. I hope that lands.
That. Yeah. Mate, no, completely. Completely. I love it. To finish up, Alex, we've got six quick fire questions for the app. So
hit me.
No, it's good, mate. It's actually better. I prefer it. I prefer it when people haven't read them. The six aspects of the wheel of life. So we've got health, mindset, leisure, relationships, career, and finance. And at Pit Stop, we think if a man can or if a person can work on each of those aspects and slowly improve at each one, that improvement bleeds into the other. And before you know it, 6-12 months go by and you're unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. So kicking off first with health, what are three simple things that you do each day to improve your health?
So taking time for oneself in the morning, okay? Taking time to notice the quality of breath, to connect with our diaphragm, to connect with our breath. So elongating the breath longer than an inhale will drop you into the parasympathetic nervous system, start to regulate the body, heart rate, digestive system. So the simple art of just elongating the breath. You said three things, right?
Three things.
Number two, cold baths. I mean, you see them everywhere on on Instagram. Now, I would say the difference is that I'm not going to tell you just to get in a cold bath. I'm going to tell you to get into a cold bath to the point of regulating yourself, moving from your sympathetic nervous system to your parasympathetic. So moving from the point where you're panicking and you've got a sharp, quick intake of breath to being still and relaxed and calm. Because what you've done in the process of that is drop back into your window of tolerance and realigned your nervous system into your parasympathetic. Again, your rest and digest. So breath, cold baths. I start the morning, every morning with salt water and lemon as well. That's a really nice one just to cleanse the palate, bring salt into the body, electrolytes. I would recommend that. Juicing, eat clean. Try and look for things that don't have 100 ingredients in.
Love that. Mindset. What is one piece of advice that you would give to someone to improve their mental fitness?
Their mental fitness? Stare at a candle. Tratica.
I love that.
I'm not even joking. Try it. Yeah.
Dude, I've got really into candles recently. I've hit that age now where candles are suddenly exciting. I got one at a Christmas market in December, and now I go through a candle every couple of weeks, and there's something, you know, find a nice smelling one or something. It's honestly, it sounds kind of lame, but I know you're preaching to the same choir, so I know it's not to you, but to anyone listening, it sounds lame, but it is so calming. Just having it on, if you can just have it in your eye line. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I've never sat and stared at one, but there must be something to it though, because there's the, you know, when there's a fire, I mean, anyone listening again, you'll know this, but you know, when you go to a bonfire or something, there is something hypnotizing about it. And I find myself sometimes, you know, my dad's new place has a log burner, and, you know, I was there over Christmas and I sat and, you know, I just disappeared for a couple of minutes because you stare into it. So I think there must be definitely something ingrained in us that wants to look at fire, you know?
100% this is ingrained in us. You know, just to set this up, it builds our concentration. So get a candle. Keep it about 8 feet away. Have it at eye line. Have the room relatively dark so you can focus just on the tip. Don't make sure the wax is cut around it, so therefore that it stays in still. Mm. Otherwise, it will move around. Make sure there's no breeze. Otherwise, it will move around. And just focus on a candle. Start to work on your ability to concentrate. This is why we have ADHD figures going out of control, is that we live in a world that really exacerbates any ADHD that's currently there. If we start to bring concentration back, we can start to empower ourselves. But no one is working on their concentration. They're working on their biceps, their triceps, their abs, but they're not working on how to concentrate. It will change your life if you commit to it, but it's hard to do.
I love that. Leisure. What does taking time out just for you look like?
Leisure. So the nice guy, right? He doesn't have any hobbies. He doesn't have any time for himself other than what he provides, what he gives, work, etc. This is the man that's the workaholic. So leisure for a man that's going down the path of really loving himself is, I have hobbies. I do things that I enjoy. I do things away from Alexander the facilitator or Sandy the podcast holder. Yeah. So what are you doing for fun? Just for doing. Sorry, just for being, not doing. Yeah. So making time to reach out to friends, making time for this. Maybe you've got children, you want to play with them, have time with them as well. Just making sure that you have other things outside the big thing that makes you really important and gives you a big fancy job title.
Relationships. No, go, what were we saying?
Well, just who are you when you're not your title? I think that's, yeah, you know, a really,
that's a good one.
important question to sit and ponder. Or how much money's in your bank account? That's another one. Or what car do you drive? Yeah, who am I? Can I love that person? Can I be with him? And can I just play with my own internal little boy? And what did I get excited about as a child? Because that's a place to revisit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one. Sorry, relationships.
Relationships. What is one piece of advice that you would give to someone to maintain good relationships in life?
Okay, so any relationship, it's never them. It's never, oh, it's all them, or it's always a dance between them and you. You are responsible for your part in the relationship. And for instance, my relationship with my beautiful partner, Daisy, who I've been together with 7, coming up 8 years, it's me and her against the problem. It's never me and her against one another. So the minute that we realize that there's a problem in the room and we are projecting probably our childhood wounding on one another in that moment, there's probably someone stood behind Daisy and I'm projecting my emotions onto her. There's someone stood behind me, she's projecting them onto me. Okay, let's just stop here. Let's stop here and say, okay, let's face this problem together. Let's have a time out. What is this problem? Okay, I'm feeling unheard. Okay, when did you feel like this previously in your life? Oh yeah, my mum. Okay, so mum's entered the room. Okay, and I'm also feeling unheard. Where did you feel that? Okay, dad. All right, so dad's entered them. So really, we're having a conversation here with a projection of mum and dad. So the problem is I feel unheard. Okay, what do you need? Okay, well, I need your presence. I need you to actually listen without trying to fix me. Okay, all right. So really dropping in to conversation. This is kind of, we're moving into kind of nonviolent communication, which is a terminology to work with and a framework to work with. But giving the opportunity for both parties to speak in relationship, to listen, to show up embodied, and then to ask what they need. And to remember it's us against the problem, not against each other. If we all followed that simple principle and we really looked at our own projections, I think it would eradicate a lot of arguments in a relationship.
Yeah, I love that. Career, what is one thing that you could attribute your career success to?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Truth. Vulnerability. Unmasking. No bullshit. No more hiding. Like really looking at myself in the mirror, frankly, and saying, okay, like I have built a career on vulnerability and openness. And that is what most people keep in their closet. They hide that because they have to wear the mask. I've created an organization called the Unmasked Man.
Yeah. Right?
Mine's all about taking mine off and teaching others to take them off. So actually the more real that we all get, the more potency there is for something true to be born and something really beautiful to be made. And I believe that when truth wants to expose itself, then the universe will reward that in astronomical ways. So it wants truth to emerge. So it's going to support anything that's built in truth. It's not going to support anything that's got a foundation of lies will fail. Anything that's got a foundation of truth. And again, this gets back to the real why, the real purpose, then it will succeed. So connect with your truth, connect with your why. And you will fly.
Love that. And then finally, finance. What is the best way to make your money work for you?
Okay. So notice your relationship with money. So I work with a man, I was coaching a man recently, and he felt that in order to earn more money, meant he had to work harder. So therefore, he didn't want to call any more money. And so I basically reflected back to him. So you're wearing a t-shirt saying fuck off money, because in order to earn more money, you think you've got to work harder. So that you're literally sending that vibration out to the world. So start to question what your relationship is with money. If you've come from a working class background like I have, you might have to do lots of exploration into your money wounds. Okay, when I grew up, all those other people were rich and we weren't. So I must be below them. So I'm actually going to enjoy being here and self-indulging in this pattern and this program that I've conditioned myself to believe, because actually I've been taught that I'm not even worthy to receive. So my finances as a man will change once I realize again that my self-worth isn't judged by what I provide, but that I'm also allowed to receive. I'm allowed to receive money. I'm allowed to receive abundance. I'm allowed to see pleasure. I'm allowed to receive compliments. If I start to look at my conditionings, then I can start to change them. Oh, actually, there's a part of me, there's a kink here that indulges in being kind of less well off because that's what I got told as a child. And so I've put the ladder so far up that I could never achieve that. But I was the one that created that ladder. Okay. And actually I can have that if I want to have that. So it's actually really going back to your relationship with money. If money is bad, if money is evil, okay, if that's your general judgment of it, I'd inquire. I'd be curious. Why? Where did you learn that? Because actually money is just an energy, and given in put in the right hands, it can do wonderful things. Put in the wrong hands, it can be very dangerous, very evil. Yeah. So it depends, again, who is orchestrating the why. Yeah. Who's orchestrating the mission? Is it coming from a sovereign place, or is it coming from a very wounded, corrupt place? Yeah, so really inquiring into your relationship with finances, money, and being really honest with yourself. You know, that's what I had to do with that with debt. Yeah, being really honest with myself. Come on now, you got yourself in a bit of a pickle here. Pull your head out the sand and face it head on.
Love that, Alex. I could talk to you all day, mate. I love this. I wanna come and spend the weekend with you guys. It sounds so good. Like I said, we did it earlier this year with another group, and it was such a great experience. I think what you're doing is awesome. Where can people go if they want to find out more about what you get up to?
So you can find us online at theunmaskedman.co.uk. You can find us on Instagram, which is the.unmaskedman, or my own personal Instagram, which is Alexander_Cottle, Cottle. And come and join us at our level 1, level 2 retreats. They work specifically with the archetypal energies that I've loosely talked about here and inquiring deeper into the shadow work. They're very different journeys and retreats than maybe a typical men just getting together, men just having a chat. This is really opening up deep trauma and facing it head on so that we can be the man we want to be for our families, for ourselves, so we can really shine again. So they're held in Dorset in the Southwest. They also take men on more deeper journeys personally, where they get to work with me in places abroad like Morocco, Thailand. And then I do one-to-one coaching, and we do facilitated trainings and men's circles in London. And we've got one in Harrogate and East Sussex as well, and others popping up along the way. All right.
Love that. Yeah, you'll be able to find out all the website and everything in the show notes below for anyone interested in listening. Once again, Alex, thanks for being on. Love this. Thank you very much to all of you for listening, and we will see you all for the next one.
Pleasure, Sandy.